On this episode, Jared Drysdale and I discuss web design tips for developers so your applications can look professional even if you don't have the budget to hire a designer. Welcome to the Frontend Developer Cast, a podcast that helps developers be awesome at building ambitious web applications. Whether you're a JavaScript ninja or you're just getting started, I'm your host, Craig McKeachy. Hi, everyone. My interview today is with Jared Drysdale, designer at large and the author of Bootstrapping Design. We discuss web design tips for developers so your application can look great, even if you don't have the budget to hire that designer. Topics include the 20% of tips that'll get you 80% of the results, including alignment, spacing, colors, fonts, where to get graphics, and how to handle navigation. So let's get started with the interview. Hi, everyone. Today, I'm lucky to have Jared Drysdale, the author of Bootstrapping Design here. We're going to talk about bootstrapping design and how developers can get better at this design skill we all find so amorphous. Welcome, Jared.
Hey, thanks for having me.
How's your week going? You having a good week?
I am. Yeah, it's been a good week. I am building a new site for myself and building a new HTML email template and all kinds of fun stuff like that. So
cool.
Busy.
The focus of why I wanted to have you on was, you know, you have this bootstrapping design book, and I think there's some really great content in there along, you know, teaching the average developer a little bit more about design. I think a lot of developers want to be better than they are at design, and I was hoping you could shed some light for us today.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I'd be happy to. The ebook, the way I write about it is, you know, it's kind of plugged for people building a startup on the side, but there's a lot of content in there, and I write a lot about teaching design to developers in general. So there's a lot of stuff I can share about that, and hopefully I won't ramble on too long and bore you guys to death with a bunch of design theory, but I try to keep it practical and useful. So
great. So what do you feel like is the most important thing that, like, a developer who doesn't know a ton about design, what's the most important thing, the 80-20 thing that they could get right that would help their web applications to look better and be better designed?
You know, when I work with developers, and I consider myself a front-end developer too, so I kind of claim that title for myself too, but I think people tend to jump into things like typography and colors and, you know, picking fonts and just trying to, you know, they get lost in those details. And I think the thing that makes the biggest difference in a design is actually just the spacing and the alignment. So, you know, like using a grid system, if you're using a front end CSS framework like Bootstrap or something, just using a grid can make a big difference. But even then, it doesn't do everything for you. You know, like it comes with a default type system and with bottom margins on all the elements and things like that. But you can go and put together a design just using Bootstrap. It still looks pretty bad. You know, you have to add all kinds of extra spacing and things. So really, when you're starting working on any aspect of the design, instead of getting lost in the details of the colors and the fonts and all that stuff, just thinking about how you can space things out, align elements together is going to make the biggest difference in how it looks.
Great. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So is it everything's just justified? Is it making sure there's enough white space, all these things, I suppose. But how do you like to think about it, like when you're working on a design?
Well, the way I look at it is using a grid helps, but there are still a lot of ways that can lead you wrong because there are just tricky things to handle. You know, like if you have two columns of just text, you know, paragraphs, and you use the default gutter, you know, in the grid, the padding between the two columns, sometimes those paragraphs can be really close together and it's hard to read. So things like that, you just have to kind of learn to notice. And I think just learning to notice is the hardest part of it. When I explain this to people, I just say, try not to worry about the colors and the fonts and all that stuff, but just pay attention to the left edge of everything or the right edge of everything. Does it line up? Should this be centered? Are you having a hard time getting the elements to line up? The left edge to line up when you scroll all the way down the page. If you are, then maybe you should try centering things, and just learning to try different ways to lay it out will really help. One tip that I give people is it's easy to get lost in using all of your web development tools or like using, you know, overlaying the grid on the page or something. Mm-hmm. But I just hold a piece of paper up to my screen and just drag it across the screen. And that edge of the paper, I try to see if, you know, elements on the screen line up with that edge of the paper. And that's like a vertical grid line. And it's just an easy way that you can evaluate things and just see if things are falling into place. And then also adding white space is really good. I mean, if you're using Bootstrap, their type system kind of helps, you know, their default like header styles and stuff kind of help. You know, if you're using a lot of rows and columns, the rows and columns don't have padding and margins built into them vertically, just horizontally. So adding stuff like that, sometimes I'll even just use like a default style of just adding like 20 pixels of padding top and bottom to every row. And that really helps just to get started, you know?
You know, a lot of people, myself included, I forget that. You know, I forget the whole alignment thing. I remember sometimes developers too, we think about data like hierarchically. So I think, Well, this data is hierarchical in the database, so it should be hierarchical on this page, for example. And so I indent each little bit slightly to show that hierarchy, you know, and I think that makes sense. But then it looks horrible, and the designers, you know, I was working with would come up and say, can you just push all this stuff to the left? And I'm like, well, but it's you know, one thing's contained inside the other. And but, you know, sure enough, when I pushed everything, you know, left aligned, it made a big difference in how good the design looked. So
that's good, though. It's good to be thinking about hierarchy. One of the topics I write about, and this is going to sound like a fancy designer term, but it's called visual hierarchy. And the idea is, when you open up a new design, where does your eye go first? And then where does your eye go second and third? And you want to have kind of a rough plan as to how important things are. So, you know, you were talking about a hierarchy in terms of like the database and, you know, which objects belong to which objects. And you have that in your mind as you're building the front end or the view. When you're assigning like visual styles to those same elements, keep that in mind. You know, what do you want people to see first? What do you want them to see second? And that really helps to have that. And it doesn't have to be planned very far, just maybe two or three elements, but that helps. And then I know, talking about things like alignment and spacing, there's this kind of classic designer developer kind of thing where we butt heads and it's like, oh, move this one pixel, it doesn't make a difference. And, you know, it seems really petty. But I really think that regardless of whether you're moving things one pixel or two pixels or whatever, just focusing on, just trying to pay attention to the alignment and spacing, it sounds like a small thing, but it's going to make such a big difference. I mean, it really does. I can't emphasize that enough. I would say, you know, if there was one thing that you tried to learn about design, it would be that.
So not to belabor on the alignment spacing too much more, but when we were talking, something occurred to me that I all struggle with a little bit, and that is, you know, I get white space and I get that I probably should put more than I'm putting right now. But one thing I often struggle with is, oh, if I put more white space here, then the next item on the page visually is kind of out of view or below the fold or...
Right.
And so like, is it not discoverable now? Or does somebody think this is the end of the text in this email because I put this extra spacing in? But it does look better when I put the white space in, particularly, you know, vertical white space. I didn't know, how do you deal with situations like that in your work?
Yeah. So people talk about the fold, you know, and that's a really kind of old school way of thinking about design. A lot of people say these days that there is no fold. You know, people are used to scrolling, so you shouldn't worry about it. And one thing to remember is there is a scroll bar built into the browser UI, you know, into the browser Chrome. So people have an indicator there that the page is taller just by default. But also, you know, there are some other things that you can do to help with that. One of the most common things people suggest, designers suggest, is just to kind of add, for your example, if you have a big, you know, margin beneath the element and that causes the following element to fall below the fold, the scroll line, you can add, you know, just some sort of subtle indication that there's a break there, that there's something there. So try to position elements that they fall, you know, halfway across the bottom of the window. So it's obvious that, you know, you can scroll down to see more.
Right.
So if you have a photo or something, you know, it flows past where the average browser window size might be. So it's obvious it's kind of cut off. And so you can see that you need to scroll down to see the rest of it. Things like that. And you can position all kinds of different elements that way, a paragraph or, you know, a box that's containing something, you know, a form, anything, even your navigation. You know, if you have a sidebar navigation, carrying down the background color so that it extends past the window so that it indicates, oh, there's something else down there, you know. Little visual hints help.
That makes
but really, I wouldn't worry too much about that. I don't think it's too big of a deal.
Yeah, that helps clarify that a little bit. I was in kind of a gray area. I want to use more white space, but then I think, oh, the user's going to say, I didn't know I had to click that save button because it's below where I can see right now, you know, this kind of
thing. Yeah, why is that? Every time you're doing a form in an application, it's like that button, that save button or that submit button always falls right just a little bit too low. You've always got enough form fields that it just bumps it down. So that's tricky. The other thing you can do with forms like that is just try other ways to lay out your form. You know, you could try stacking a few of the form fields horizontally to save yourself a little vertical space. Things like that sometimes help. Or, you know, putting the labels for the form fields to the side of the fields instead of above them can save you some vertical space. So there are little tricks like that that you can try. It just depends on the situation, you know.
Okay. So we've got everything aligned. What about colors and fonts, though? I sometimes get to the analysis paralysis. This looks good to me, but bad to my coworker. They don't like that shade of red or whatever it would be,
right. You know,
this kind of thing. So,
For colors, what I always tell people is color is, I think it's the hardest part of design to get right. I think it probably took me 3 or 4 years of working as a designer professionally before I could actually open up Photoshop or whatever and use a color picker to create a color scheme from scratch. I think it took me 3 or 4 years of work to be able to do that. And it's really hard. So what I recommend for people to do is just to copy color schemes. So go look around on the web, see what color schemes you like that kind of fit what you're trying to do on your project, and just copy it. You know, just use the exact same colors in the exact same ways as you see somebody else doing it. You know, your design is not going to look anything like theirs because your content's different, your use is different, your UI is different. You're just using the colors. So you're not really ripping them off. It's just you're kind of getting inspiration from how they're using colors. And it's a lot easier than trying to come up with it on your own.
Right. And you're probably not going to do it right if you do.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I always tell people, you know, like you can read about color theory and color wheels and complementary colors and all this stuff, and you can follow all of that stuff correctly and still end up with something really ugly. And it's just not helpful. I think when you're trying to do a design, you don't have a lot of experience. I mean, later on, once you have 4 years of experience, you can look at that stuff and get ideas from it. But if you're a developer and you're just trying to put together just a quick theme for your application and you're not sure what to do with the colors, just copy them. You'll do a lot better than trying to come up with something on your own. And I would say pretty much the same thing about typography. As for that, there's a couple rules that I give people, just kind of rules of thumb. Again, it's kind of the same way with typography. If you go read a design book or a design blog, they'll start teaching you about all these genres. The weird thing about typography is some of the genres are about history. You know, they're just about, when was the written letter? When did that transform into print? Well, that's a type genre, you know, stuff like that, and just how it evolved over time. And then also there are other ones that are just purely about how the font looks. And it's really confusing to learn all that stuff. So just ignore all that. And really, when you're trying to pick fonts, look at them in two ways. One is display. So display font would just be for anything that's really big on the page, like, you know, a header or a logo or something like that. For display, you can use a font that's kind of decorative looking, kind of fancy looking, but you wouldn't want to use a display font for text, you know, for like 5 paragraphs, because it would be hard to read.
Right.
And that's the second setting is text. If you have a text setting, you want to make sure that the font you pick for that is really easy to read, you know, maybe 16 pixels or whatever the equivalent is in EMs or whatever you're using, just making sure that it's really readable at a smaller size for longer text. That applies to stuff like buttons and stuff. You don't want to have a really fancy font on a button because you want it to be easy to read. And a fancy font is really only easy to read at a really large size. So display fonts and text fonts, just look at it in those two use cases and you'll find that it's a lot easier to pick.
Interesting. I've never heard the term display fonts before, but you know, I know I've been differentiating them in my head, but I'm always thinking, you know, like headers and things like that. But is that a term that's commonly used in the design community, the display font term?
I mean, it is a term that's used in design, but it's actually kind of a obscure typography term that's okay. Kind of used sometimes and kind of not. And I've kind of appropriated it for my own use.
I got you.
I just think it helps to use those two distinctions. You know, I think most designers would agree with me that, you know, if you think about using fonts in these two specific ways, it'll help. They might not call it display, but that's just the term that I use. A lot of fonts, you might, if you're a typography nerd like me, you can go look around at fonts and some of them will be called, like, they'll add display to the end of it. And usually what that means is that's a font that's a little bit more decorative looking and you can only use it for large areas.
Okay.
Or a large font size. So I kind of appropriated that, but
it makes sense. It makes sense.
Cool.
So what about images? So we've got good alignment. We got colors and we've got some good typography or fonts.
Sure.
Stack there. What do we do for images that we need?
Yeah. So, I mean, especially if you're doing an application like a, you know, it's really just UI heavy, you know, it's not a landing page or anything. I think typography is probably the best way to go. It's going to make a big difference in your design because it's about how people are using your application, right? But I mean, if you do need some sort of graphics like images, icons are a great way to go. There are lots of good icon libraries. My favorite right now is Font Awesome. It's just great. It's really high quality, super easy to use as a web font and just easy to implement. So I think that's always a go-to if you're talking about applications.
It's funny you say that because I love that library too. And I approached the creator of that and I think he's going to be on the show in the next month
So that's great.
Yeah. I think one thing I was interested in it is it appears from, you know, looking him up on the internet and so forth that he's actually just a photographer. So he's not a designer by trade. He's a photographer for a living.
I didn't realize that. That's interesting.
So anyway,
yeah, he does a great job with that. I highly recommend that.
What's the scope of, I mean, obviously I'm going to dig deep into it on that episode, but
sure.
So it's basically icons that can be used, you know, throughout your application on buttons or, you know, inputs
right.
or places like that. Is that then essentially what's going on?
Yeah. So just using it is pretty simple. I mean, obviously there are a bunch of different ways to use it. You can download it's built into a web font, so you can use it as a web font. And when you do that, the CSS, he has it set up so that it uses the before pseudo class. And then you just add a couple classes on an I element, just an I HTML element, just like the FA class and then FA dash whatever the icon is.
Right.
And it pretty much takes care of it for you. And you can use it wherever you want. You can stick it inside of buttons. You can make the icon really big and use it as almost like a big graphic, which I've done. So it's really flexible. And since it's a web font, it's all vector. So it scales up easily. Vector is another graphics term. It just means it's like a graphic that you can scale up without losing quality like you would with a JPEG or something.
Okay.
But since it's a web font, it's really flexible and it's just really easy, adaptable to use in a lot of different situations. So you can use it a small size or big size or whatever. I think Font Awesome is great. There are a bunch of others too. If you're looking for just kind of something different, there's a website called The Noun Project. And this is just kind of a big repository where designers contribute illustrations and icons, and you can go on there and there are different licenses. You can use them for free if you attribute, you know, where you got it from,
okay.
Or you can pay for a commercial license as well. And it's pretty affordable for each icon, but you can use them for a really large illustration for some of them. And it's a great way to get a cheap, like, illustration on your site. If you're designing a landing page or something.
I had heard of that before, but forgotten. That's a great resource.
Yeah, it's actually huge. There's a ton of stuff on there. So, and it's all pretty high quality, surprisingly. So I definitely recommend that if you need that.
Anything else sort of similar to Font Awesome that, I mean, I know a lot of people are heading towards that. So I think it's a good recommendation, but I'm just curious if you have some other similar libraries that you like to look for when you can't quite find the icon you need.
Yeah, there are several. The Noun Project, again, is a good place to look because some of those you can use at smaller sizes. Another one is called Glyph Icons. And this is actually the icon library that used to be included with Twitter Bootstrap. If you go to their website, you can actually buy it and it includes a lot more icons. And it's something like $50 or something and you get a whole bunch. I'm looking at it now, actually, it's like 470 icons and you can use it as a web font or whatever you want. And it looks kind of similar to Font Awesome, but it's a slightly different style. And obviously they have a different selection of icons in there. So that's a good one. And then let's see what else. I use another one. It's called Glyphish.
Okay.
And originally this started as an icon library for iPhone development, so making mobile apps. The original icon set was kind of designed with that. You know, if you remember the iPhone 3 and the kind of icons people were using back then in their application UI, it looked like that, but it's since been redesigned and he updates it quite frequently. I think it's download only and you can't really use it as a web font, but it's a good one. The design's really high quality. I use that if I'm using like Photoshop or Illustrator or something, but I think it comes in different ways. So yeah, those are a couple good ones, really high quality.
So we've gotten through quite a few categories of things here. We've gotten through our alignment and our colors and some fonts and got some nice icons in there. spruce things up. What about navigation? That's something, you know, I frequently struggle with when building web applications. I learned, you know, when I worked at some interactive firms, there's this idea of primary and secondary and tertiary navigation. And
right.
Sometimes you don't want all of that, that sort of thing. Can you talk about your thoughts on navigation?
What I tell people is the best navigation is invisible. You don't want people to have to think about it. I think a lot of times, at least developers I've worked with in the past, when they build a navigation out, they're thinking in terms of like CRUD or REST, how the backend is built. If they have a navigation, they have one link for create, update, delete, you know, so on. And it adds a lot of links, you know? So one of the things I try to recommend is consider adding contextual links for some of those, you know? So if you have an object and you need to have an edit or delete view, have those just sit off to the side somewhere, you know, next to the title of the object that's shown on the page. And if you click the link, it just opens a little modal window where you can edit a couple form fields and hit save. Or same thing with delete. Just reorganizing some of those actions in slightly different ways can help reduce the number of elements or the number of items in your navigation. If you're building a web application, it's totally different than if you have a really content-heavy website, something like a news website where you've got new content coming in every day and there's a bunch of different ways to look at it. So for example, if you're doing a newspaper website and there's US news and world news and, you know, business news and all kinds of different subsections, that's a totally different kind of navigation to design than if you're building some sort of web application that's got all these different workflows that a user might have to do. I mean, in the first case, you know, if it's a content heavy website, I recommend just trying to plan on what users are looking for. You know, you have this big list of all this content that you have, and it's easy to just say like, well, okay, here's a list of everything I have. That's my navigation, you know, but the best way to do that is to think about it in terms of, I mean, first of all, if you do that, you're going to have a really large navigation and it's going to be really hard for people to navigate through that. But, you know, if you look at it in terms of how your visitor, how your reader is trying to find what they're trying to find and organize it with that in mind, it's going to be a lot more logical and you can find kind of logical groups for things. In the second case, if you're designing an app UI, like I was saying earlier, you end up with list items, you know, navigation items for all of these different actions in your application and just trying to group them into views that make sense for what your workflow is, for what your user is trying to do, rather than just listing everything that they can do, if that makes sense.
Yes, yes. Now, when you were talking about the CRUD example, though, I didn't quite follow what you were suggesting. I get the problem, I think. But so let's drill into that a little bit more. So
sure.
Let's say I've got a list of projects or something, and I'm going to
right.
And I want to create them and edit them and delete them and that sort of thing. So mm-hmm. What exactly were you suggesting there?
Just a quick example. Say you have a list of projects. Maybe that's your navigation on the left side of the page. Maybe we're doing a project management app.
Right.
We got a list of projects down the left side. One project is blog redesign. Another project is landing page. So I click blog redesign. I want to view that object. So, you know, that opens up the read view and I can see all the data underneath the blog redesign project, you know, maybe a deadline and a budget and a whatever other elements that belong under there. There are a few actions that I can perform on that object, right? That blog redesign project. I can change the name of it. I can reassign it to a new person. I can do all these different things. And it's tempting to just say, well, okay, if you want to view it, if you want to edit it, if you want to delete it, all those things, just bury those in that left navigation,
okay.
That list of projects on the left-hand side, and just indent them a little bit, almost like an expanding navigation or something, just list them out. But what's really better to do is just let them click into that project. And once they're viewing it, give them a link off to the right-hand side or beneath the title or something that says edit or delete. And when they click edit, it lets them edit just the name of the project. Rather than listing it out and having a huge stack of links on the left side of the page, you're putting that edit action into context.
Right, into sort of the details page of that entity or item that you're
right, exactly.
On. Okay, okay.
Yeah, maybe CRUD wasn't the right metaphor to use there because I know not everybody's doing that these days, but it's just the way I look at it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do have CRUDish things and they have trouble getting out of the mindset of how could I do this differently? To me, this is a database table and people can edit data in it, you know, and sometimes it takes a little bit of imagination to
exactly, yeah.
So.
I think that's the best way to look at it, is just kind of imagine a more useful way to access all those actions. You don't need to present them all up front. You know, you don't need to say to somebody, well, here's the project list and you can edit and update and delete every single one of them. Present them with those options when they actually need it, when they're actually looking at each one.
We didn't talk about this before, so if I'm putting you on the spot here, but
no, that's fine.
When you look for inspiration in like a web app design, I mean, you're probably always looking at different people's web applications for inspiration, new ideas, how to organize things. Do you have any particular sites you like to go to, or just like to always keep a lookout there for things?
You know, I do always kind of, I think, and other designers I know do the same thing, like just as a user, you know, when I'm out using, you know, say I'm using MailChimp or something and I see a UI on there that I like, I'll just take a screenshot of it and just keep it on my computer in a folder. You know, I've got this folder of just screenshots of different UI examples. So if I run into that problem, I'll go look at that folder. But the other thing is, you know, if I can't find a screenshot or an example of that, I'll just start looking through different applications that I use and seeing how other people solve that same UI issue. But yeah, other designers that I've talked to do the same thing. They have a kind of a like a makeshift library of screenshots. It's actually kind of hard to sort through, but you know, it's good for inspiration if you're looking for different ideas. And the other thing that I found with that actually is just using a front-end framework can solve a lot of those problems for you, you know, because they have components built for a lot of these common use cases now. And sometimes you don't have to overthink it. You can just drop in a component and you're good to go. So,
Jared, I thank you for coming on the show today. This has been really, really helpful. I encourage the readers to check out the Bootstrapping Design book. If, you know, just we're interested in what the topic we're talking about and want to find out more, you know, I'm going to put in the show notes a link to Jared's newsletter. He has a newsletter on the, is that on Studio Fellow or on Bootstrapping Design, Jared?
Yeah, the newsletter is just at bootstrappingdesign.com.
Okay. So go check out Bootstrapping Design. I'll put a link, like I said, in the show notes, but I think it's just /newsletter, something close to that. You'll be able to find it there. And I think you can get more information along these lines. So if you're a developer out there wanting to get better at design, I've always found this topic interesting. Be sure to check that out.
Thanks so much.
All right. Take care.
You too.
Thanks for listening to the Frontend Developer Podcast. Please subscribe to the podcast by going to the iTunes store on your phone or desktop, then searching for Frontend, or via RSS by going to frontendcast.com, where you'll also find show notes and a full transcript of each episode. You can also sign up for my free AngularJS, Backbone, and Ember crash course. All of them solve the same problem, so why not learn them together? See you next time.